ultimately, we come to the parameter wisdom. In bodhicitta, there is the unity of compassion and wisdom, or alternatively may be mentioned as method and wisdom. And wisdom and compassion are inseparable. Like a bird that has two wings. A bird with only one wing can't fly, can it? However, with both wings it can fly. Similarly, great compassion is not separate from great wisdom. Without great wisdom, there won't be great compassion. And without great compassion, there won't be great wisdom. What we have predominantly been practicing has been in relation to the relative truth or relative bodhicitta. Now, what we'll talk about is wisdom, ultimate bodhicitta. Generally, within the lineage, what we will start in our practices is the outer preliminary practices and the inner preliminary practices. And this helps us to develop a stable platform or a stable foundation in our practice. And this included with developing our awareness through meditation and the practice of Guru Yoga. And then when we have a stable foundation in these practices, we get the opportunity to be introduced to these wisdom pith instructions. Through these practices, we get the opportunity to transcend conceptuality. We look at the essence of awareness and of all phenomena. Ostensibly, everything that exists is due to the mind that knows objects or the objects that are known by mind. Due to our current ignorance, whatever we see, what we perceive, appears to exist on its own side. It appears to be independent of us. It appears to be real and permanent. However, this is not the case. This is not the truth. This is just our perception that this is the way it is. For instance, all external objects, if we really investigate them, and science these days helps us to understand this, think how great these past practitioners were. They realized this wisdom emptiness without all of the scientific knowledge that we have today. Through our perception, we perceive these objects to be independent and permanent. However, the reality is that everything is made up of parts or components, can be subdivided into its smaller parts. An example of this may be a motor vehicle. The motor vehicle is seen as a unit, it's seen as independent. However, that motor vehicle can be subdivided into parts, into the components that make up the motor vehicle. We have that concept motor vehicle. However, the motor vehicle can be divided into its doors, the engine, the tires, the seats, the steering wheel, all the electronic components. And then each of those components can be divided into smaller and smaller components. For instance, we may take the engine. It can be divided into its parts. And then those parts can be divided further until we get to atoms. And now science is even telling us that we can divide even smaller than atoms into quarks. And maybe we can even divide that even further so that we eventually get emptiness. Through this investigation, we start to realize the emptiness of all phenomena. Everything that we perceive is made up of many parts and components. And these we can divide further into emptiness. In the same way, we investigate this concept of I. How does this I exist? How does this physical body of ours exist? How does this self-grasping of ours exist? We investigate into our body, this flesh body, where exactly is this I? Where exactly is the self-grasping in our body? Where exactly are all of these arising afflictive emotions? And through these practices, we start to realize that what we are perceiving as being so real and independent are merely concepts. And even time is just a concept. However, within our mind, we attach to these concepts as being so real and independent and permanent. And in this way, we really investigate this concept of I and the self-grasping of ours and our attachment to this I and this ego that causes us so much suffering. As Shantideva said, if a practitioner cannot give up his own happiness for all sentient beings and take on their pain and suffering, there won't be any hope for this practitioner to attain enlightenment. The practices that we have been doing so far have really helped us to, one, benefit other sentient beings, and similarly is to reduce the self-grasping of ours, like, for instance, the practice of Tonglen. Through these practices, gradually, we will be able to realize our true nature of mind, realize our Buddha nature, our Rigpa. Every single sentient being has this nature, this true nature of mind, has Buddha nature. Any being with mind has this Buddha nature. Although all beings have this Buddha nature, we perceive this world differently due to the result of our own personal karma that we have generated. However, beneath all of these perceptions and these afflictive emotions and judgments and discursive thoughts is this true nature of mind. The only difference is we haven't realized it, we haven't recognized it. And as a result, we live our lives chasing after all of these superficial emotions and discursive thoughts and material phenomena, instead of looking at what is really permanent, this true nature of mind of ours, this ultimate nature or pristine awareness. In the beginning of our practices, we may have learned meditation, awareness, and developing this awareness, practicing bodhicitta. This helps us to know what to adopt, what to accept, and what to let go of. Now what we start looking at is the essence of awareness. And we investigate the essence of phenomena. And through this, practitioners have the opportunity to transcend these conceptual thoughts, these discriminatory thoughts, these afflictive emotions, and recognize this pristine nature of ours, our primordial awareness, as it is mentioned in the Guru Yoga of His Holiness Gyalwe Nyugu Rinpoche. Ah, to my own essence, the Guru, free of dualistic conceptuality and clinging, I go for refuge. In the state of primordial purity, the complete liberation from both samsara and nirvana, free of anything to add or remove, I give rise to bodhicitta. These are in the first four lines of the Guru Yoga of His Holiness Gyalwe Nyugu Rinpoche. And then in the first four lines of His Holiness Lama Achuk Rinpoche, it is the same. Ah, to the primordial self-arising Lama, I go for refuge beyond elimination and establishment. All sentient beings are primordially Buddhas. Thus, to regain Buddhahood, I generate the mind of enlightenment. And these are just quotes from the very special practice of the Guru Yoga of His Holiness Lama Achuk Rinpoche and Gyalwe Nyugu Rinpoche. And in these Guru Yoga, generally, the teachings or the instructions are pointing us towards our true nature of mind. And essential to realizing wisdom is having a very good guru, an enlightened teacher. They are instructing us from their own realization of the true nature of mind, and they have the methods to be able to guide us to the state of our true nature of mind. And it goes without saying that to realize these instructions, we need to put in our own diligent practice. And through these practices, we may realize the illusory nature of things, the dreamlike nature of things. Like a dream, we may be dreaming that we've been away from home for a very long time, we've been in a remote place, we haven't had a chance to eat any pizza or cappuccino, and we're missing our partner. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, our partner arrives and we are so happy. And not only that, they brought a warm, fresh, hot pizza with a hot cappuccino, and we think life is so great. Could it get better than this? And then a little bit later, our partner tells us, well, they're leaving us, they're dumping us, they no longer want to be in the relationship, and all of this happiness is suddenly devastated. We devastated, very unhappy. And then we hear the alarm clock going. The alarm clock is ringing and the dream is over. It was just a dream. And then we might feel so relieved. Oh, thank goodness that was just a dream. It wasn't real. And then we don't think about it anymore. Did it really happen? No. However, when we were having the dream, it felt so real. We could smell that pizza. We could experience the events, that happiness and that hurt. However, when the alarm clock went off and woke us up, we realized it was just a dream. It wasn't real at all. Our body was lying on the bed, probably unmoving, while all of this was happening within our mind. A whole new world appeared in our dream. Similarly, everything that is happening in our awake state is illusory and impermanent. However, we perceive it as all being so real, and so we attach to it as being real. And as a result, all of these afflictive emotions and all of the suffering arises. Some people may be really concerned. What will this life be like if we have transcended concepts? How will we live this life? Maybe the best example for me to use is to use the teachers as an example. As they say, when we transcend these concepts, we have great compassion. Our mind is very vast and we have great wisdom. If we look at these great masters, they are very alert. They are very awake. They do have great love and kindness and compassion. Maybe this is the best example to explain what your life might be like once you have realized your true nature of mind and transcended concepts. We may say, but we hear them using concepts. Yes, they use concepts, but they are no longer bound by concepts. Maybe we could say they are in this world, but they are not of this world. And in this true nature of mind, one is free of all of these afflictive emotions and this ignorance and the related suffering. All the phenomena still appear. However, our attachment to these phenomena as being real is no longer there. And as a result, we don't experience suffering. As a result of that attachment and ignorance, no. And as the great teachers say, that the state of mind is beyond concept. And so concepts are unable to explain a state of mind that has transcended concepts. However, we can use concepts to point us in the direction. For instance, there's the example of pointing at the moon. Our finger can point in the direction of the moon, but it doesn't touch the moon. Likewise, we can use concepts to direct us, to guide us on how to achieve or to realize the true state of mind or true nature of mind. However, we will only know the true nature of mind through our own experience, through our own realization. For instance, if you give somebody some chocolate to eat, if you try and explain the taste of chocolate to them, they might understand or have an idea, but they won't really know the taste of chocolate. However, if they taste the chocolate themselves, they will know the taste of chocolate. Nothing compares to the taste of chocolate. Just like they say as well, when you realize this true nature of mind, you will know, and nothing will compare to that state of mind. Another example of the illusory nature of things is the reflection of the moon in water. Or when we look at our face in the mirror, what happens is a reflection appears, and that reflection of our face is very clear. However, that reflection isn't real. It's just a reflection. It's just an illusion. And when our face appears in the mirror, does it leave any marks on the mirror? No, it doesn't. Similarly, when we are abiding in the true nature of mind, all of the appearances are still there. However, in that state of mind, we have transcended conceptuality. And so in this state of mind, whatever actions we engage in, we don't leave any karmic traces or imprints within our mind stream.